The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position of ONTV's management, staff, or board of directors.
Detroit basketball!
All right, and hello, and welcome into Views from the Sidelines off of a week off hiatus. Malik was a little busy with work. No big deal. That's Malik Hill. I'm Joey Tysik, and we didn't talk about the Super Bowl because of last week, which is wild because it honestly, to me, as soon as the Super Bowl ended, it just felt like now it's been months away. That, like, football season is long gone, but it's only been 2 weeks.
I'm ready to get to the draft.
Yeah, that's like I think for the Lions fans, we're like, let's get to the offseason. What are we gonna do? What moves are we gonna make? We got lots of money. We got draft picks. It should be fun. But we wanted to talk about the Super Bowl really quick, just to kind of go over everything. I ended up watching the game, and it was super boring.
First three quarters.
Yeah, the ending was good. I appreciate the ending. It was nice. Went into overtime, kind of cool. And unfortunately, though, when it went into overtime, you just felt like, hey, okay, the Chiefs are going to win. I felt it on the last drive, even, that they were just going to make that comeback. So where do you put Patrick Mahomes? Whether you, like, right now, obviously he's number one. But where do you put him in the greatest of all time at this point? Is he right behind Brady? And then where do you put this Chiefs team? Do you think they can keep winning? Or, I don't know, do you think they're going to eventually stumble? Where do you sit right now with this team and Patrick Mahomes?
I don't have a list ready to go, but I would put Patrick Mahomes probably in the 7 to 10 range of the top 10 right now.
Okay.
He has the greatest start to a career in NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
But he still has a long way to go.
Yeah.
He's on track to be the greatest.
Right.
But Tom Brady had three Hall of Fame careers basically in one career.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning is still known pretty much as like the greatest regular season quarterback of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Drew Brees is disrespected all time. He was unbelievable in New Orleans. I'm just talking about modern quarterbacks right now.
Yeah.
You got Aaron Rodgers, who some people say is the most talented QB of all time. But he just hasn't won enough. Haven't gotten to the 90s yet. Dan Marino, Joe Montana, who's also 80s. John Elway, who's also the 80s. Mm-hmm. Brett Favre, who's in the Hall of Fame. The list keeps going. Yeah. Then you go back to the 80s and the 70s. I can't put them all the way up there yet. Because there are people that are already cemented with gold jackets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, has he already accomplished what some Hall of Famers haven't?
Yeah.
Yes. Statistically and ring-wise, he's already ahead of what some of the greatest have ever done. A lot of people from his era say Dan Marino was the best quarterback they ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Marino got to one Super Bowl in his second season. Never got back. Part of that is because he plays in Miami. We're not going to go deeply into the whole quarterback thing. Maybe we could do that another day. But, yeah, I can't put Pat all the way up there yet.
Yeah. And it depends on what you weigh. As far as Hall of Famers and things like that, it's the same boat when you get into basketball. A lot of people, like, if Charles Barkley would have won a championship, he could have been.
If he beat Jordan, he's probably almost top 10.
Right.
If he beat Jordan that one time.
Which is crazy because you say that one thing and you say, oh, Charles was close to top 10. But because he didn't, people think that's crazy talk. And they're like, no, he's way, way down there. He's a great player, but he's down there. So it's crazy that it changes the narrative like that. I personally kind of am with you. I think I would put him higher, definitely. Like, easy top five. But I agree with you in the fact that he has to keep the trajectory going because he already has the hardware to keep up with all those guys. It's just that he needs to keep the trajectory of the stats to be there in the all-time lists. by the time it's all said and done. And I think he's going to get there. I don't think it's going to be easy or hard for him, actually. The thing that's crazy to me is, you know, all your, like, as you grow up as a kid, you think everybody talks about the year, the era prior, and they talk about, like, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, in football, even Tom Brady, even though he's into our adulthood. But you keep thinking, like, who's going to take that next step? But we've been able to see guys like LeBron, who's competed with Jordan as who's the greatest of all time. Steph Curry is the greatest shooter of all time. Now we have Patrick Mahomes, who is competing with Brady and others for the greatest all-time quarterback. And it's like we are seeing generational players in our own time period. To me, I don't know about you, but when you sit back and think about that, it's kind of crazy. Because all your life you grow up and you're like, every parent and everybody in that era just says, nobody could ever live up to what Jordan did. And as much as we hate on LeBron, he's doing that. And so it's just crazy to think about, in my opinion. Do you ever feel that way? That like if you take a step back and you're like, wow, we're actually living through some of the greatest players the sport has ever seen. Do you ever take the time to think about
that? There's a grumpy old man side of me that doesn't like to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Because I'm logical and I see the level of talent is at an all-time high in both football and basketball. But listen, man, I grew up watching the Detroit Pistons in 2004 and 2005. They were winning games like 72-65.
Yeah.
There's a certain like type of basketball that I loved and enjoyed watching.
Yeah.
Having like six different dudes average over 30 just is strange to me. It's incredible.
Yeah.
But it's strange to me. And it sounds like I'm a hater. I might be. Like I said, there's a grumpy old man.
That's okay. I'm a hater most of the time. So.
Yeah. But honestly, in terms on the football side, I think the quarterback position is kind of at a low.
You think so overall?
Do you remember in 2011 when Drew Brees and Peyton Manning and Matt Stafford and Aaron Rodgers all threw for over 5,000 yards?
That's the thing.
When was the last time that happened?
I do think that's an interesting point because like you see numbers and touchdowns and things are up, but yet every other like statistical category is kind of down.
Listen, the talent level of quarterbacks are at an all-time high. The level of quarterbacking is not at an all-time high.
Yeah.
To me, that's not grumpy old man. That's a fact.
Do you think that's something to do with like, because people have been talking about how like they're not like defenses are not allowing the big play as often. And they're keeping everything in front of them. Do you think that's part of it, that they're not playing?
I'd say that's part of it. Defenses have adjusted because players are so talented right now. Receivers are so dangerous. Quarterbacks can chuck it so deep. But also, I think like going into the 2010s, the NFL players, NFL defenses were still allowed to play like tough brands of defense.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees, not the most mobile guy. Peyton Manning, not the most mobile guy. Aaron Rodgers was known as like a top three most mobile QB in the league.
Right.
In 2011. And Matthew Stafford could have run around. He was a gunslinger. Matthew Stafford was more in like the Brett Favre mold.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I just think the level of like coaching and defense was at an elite level. You still had like Hall of Fame coaches in the game at that time.
Yeah, you still had guys like Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed in the game.
And like, and defense was, offense was evolving. People were starting to pass it more. Drew Brees was throwing it like, it was almost no huddle the way he was going so fast.
Right.
Yeah, but like I don't know, man.
I'd like to know how that happened.
Peyton Manning threw for almost 5,500 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to know how that happened. Like,
yeah.
Because I do go back to that every once in a while, and you're like, you see the numbers, like this year, like Goff and Tua, maybe Josh Allen, were like the only guys that got over 4,000 yards. Like, what were those guys doing back then that they got 5,000 yards? And I know that didn't happen every year, but yeah, it was a weird time, I guess.
I think the way the quarterback position was looked at the time was different. Like, nowadays, these quarterbacks, like Josh Allen, he was like, he was top 10 in the league in rushing touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was almost top. He had like 17 rushing touchdowns.
Him and Jalen Hurts were double digits.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
The running game is like a major key part of what they do.
Yeah.
And even though teams know it, these guys are so athletic that they're still so dangerous
mm-hmm.
that they're going to take off and make plays.
Right.
That is just as important as sitting in the pocket and throwing touchdown passes nowadays.
Yeah.
In 2011, you had to sit in the pocket and make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be accurate, and you had to be on time. And as offense was evolving, those all-time elite guys like Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, the offense went up and they went up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting seeing the differences.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's a good point, too. Because I also think, like you said, I think – that's the hard part, is because there's so many good quarterbacks in the league right now, but yet statistically, it's kind of down a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
And this is in a time where football is supposedly tailored mostly to offense.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterbacks get all the calls. If you hit somebody the wrong way, it's either unnecessary roughness or it's targeting.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are tailored to the offenses. And I don't think any of these guys are breaking Peyton Manning's record.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It's happening.
No, I don't think so either. And that's the same thing with like running backs. Like, we keep talking about tandems every year and stuff. And the game's just kind of evolving. But to circle it back to basketball where we started, like,
we started with the Super Bowl, but we think we went to basketball.
Right, and then we bounced
around. It's a good conversation.
But like, to go back to the basketball aspect of like offenses being too crazy nowadays, there needs to be like a middle ground, because
that is, I think the like late 2000s going into the 2010s was the ultimate sweet spot.
Yeah. Cause the only time back then that you had 30 point a night scores was like AI,
Kobe,
and Tracy McGrady.
D-Wade hit 30.
Yeah.
I think one season.
But it was only like one or two guys, maybe. Yeah.
It was special when you saw somebody average over 30.
Yeah. And now, right now, we have like three or four. I think.
Yeah.
Because it's Joel, Luka. Who's the other
Shea
one?
Shea is averaging 30.
Shea. There's one other I feel like I'm forgetting, but.
We probably are. It's around four or five people, I think.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And this
Giannis,
is something.
I think Giannis is averaging 30.
He's close, if not. But that's the hard thing, because like you said, we grew up with the Pistons Pacers matchup,
yeah,
which was like 60s a lot of the times.
Which is this? It was also because the 04 Pistons had statistically the greatest defense of all time,
right?
So that was a part of the reason,
yeah.
But still, it was like when you got into the playoffs, it was like grind down style of basketball, mm-hmm.
And it's not one of those like boring defensive matchups. It was like
it was fun to watch,
fun back and forth, like people blocking shots, stuff like that. Good defensive play. So there needs to be like a middle ground. And the reason I bring this back up is because this sways right into All-Star Weekend. Oh, boy. And this is where, like, the NBA, it's a tough thing, because the radio was actually talking about this the other day. NBA ratings are up right now. But it seems like the hardcore fans dislike it, because there's too much offense. There's too much free throw shooting. And there's basically no defense, because the defense can't do anything. And the other thing that I wanted to tie into all of this is we're beginning to see that a little bit in the NFL, where viewership is up. This was one of the highest rated Super Bowls. We know part of it is Taylor Swift. But people are enjoying the game, but the diehard fans are disliking it because it feels like no defense can be played at times. So it's really, it's a weird spot in these two major sports right now, where the game is evolving and viewership is up, but they're taking away almost from the diehard fan base. And I don't know how that's going to go moving forward.
Well, I would say they're catering to the new diehards, which are NBA Twitter, which is some of the, I'm not even going to go.
But the problem with that, being a diehard Twitter follower.
Yeah. NBA Twitter is like not 80% toxic.
Is that?
And 20% actual basketball talk.
I was going to say, I don't hate to be completely rude, but a lot of them don't have the basketball IQ.
Not at all. Most of them don't know basketball.
Or the history, and that's like...
They follow individual players.
Right.
And they may be a fan of a team, but they barely understand what's actually happening with their...
Yeah. And this is the wild part, too, is like, this becomes where me being only at 31 years old makes me feel like an old guy.
Me too.
Because...
Yeah. Like, I'm not even... Yeah.
Right. I mean, you're my brother's age, and like, me and my brother grew up getting like... Basically, like basketball almanacs, looking at all these stats, looking at history from the 80s, the 70s. And we like learned because we loved basketball so much and we just ate it up.
These kids today.
And then you play all the old, you play the video games, and you know, people say video games rot your mind. Well, I learned about older players because of these video games and things. So I have like a pretty good knowledge.
We had a joy of the game.
Exactly.
All throughout the years, we had a joy of the game. And it was exciting learning about things from the past.
Mm-hmm. And so now that leads us into All-Star talk. Because the All-Star weekend
What have they done to my boy? What have they done to my child?
It's... Every year you talk about like the dunk contests and things, and you don't think it can get any worse. And then Jaylen Brown enters the building.
Listen, white glove on the left hand... And jumping over a 5'3 dude in a chair.
I wish I could find my text messages. I can't remember if it was to you and Chris or if it was to my brother. But I texted somewhere along the lines when Jaylen Brown entered the dunk contest. I said, watch him make a dunk with his left hand.
I don't think he sent it to us.
So,
yeah, that was his, was that his first or second dunk?
I think it was like his second or something. But the dunk contest... Something needs to change, and I don't know what it is. It's been the talk of the last week, but my biggest problem with the dunk contest, and this was before we even found out that the judges were terrible. They showed the graphic when they brought up the dunk contest and the rules, and at the very bottom it said, dunks will be scored from 40 to 50. Now, does that make any sense to you? That you are automatically a 40? Just being there, to me, that makes no sense. Sometimes people need to be humbled. Jaylen Brown attempted an alley-oop D. Brown dunk, and he didn't cover his face until he landed. He deserved
less than a
like 15.
Yeah.
15 being just for the idea of it. Cool. It was a good idea. A nod to Boston. But it was terrible execution. And he, for that dunk, somehow got an okay score. And he made it to the final over Jacob Toppin, who did a dunk that basically Obi Toppin did in his game, in his dunk contest win.
It was still better than anything Jaylen Brown was doing.
Yeah.
How many Hawkes' windmill? Was it over Shaq?
Yeah, his first dunk.
His windmill over Shaq was better than Jaylen Brown's dunks.
Yeah. And then, Mac McClung did a dunk where he literally grabbed the ball below his waist, and then he brought it up like midway.
That was impressive.
Let go.
That first one was impressive.
Grabbed back on and flushed it.
And he didn't get all 50s.
But he didn't. He scored lower than... Jaylen Brown, I think.
He had the most
creative
dunk of the contest.
And this has happened a couple times where, like, they get these older guys. The problem was the inverse happened before. They used to get Dr. J to be a judge.
And he,
and he would harshly judge everybody every time. And it's like, dude, what do you want to see? You didn't do anything special back then compared to what they're doing now. And Dr. J is one of the greatest dunkers of all time. But there's, like, this weird... thing when you get these judges up there. And I don't know. And I felt like Dominique was like being way too gracious for a lot of people.
What was Jaylen Brown bringing the... Who was the kid that wore the Dominique Wilkins jersey?
And nobody
knows.
Who
was that kid?
Nobody knows. What? Nobody knows. It was supposed to be
that
like...
That confused me so much.
So I guess it was supposed to...
And he had a high top fade, like...
It's supposed to look like Dominique. But it was like this thing like, Dominique is teaching me this dunk. as a kid. I don't know. It's weird.
It made no sense.
He had so many theatrics.
I just saw a child that was like made to look. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And the windmill wasn't even that good.
No.
That he did.
No. And I don't know if you noticed, he stuck his tongue out like every dunk.
Listen,
like, at least he was having fun, I guess.
That was like Andre Drummond levels of just get out of here.
Yeah.
Just go.
So, I don't know. And then he dunked over Kai Cenat, which
5'3"
guy.
Sitting
in a chair.
Sitting
in a chair. Oh, man. It's rough.
I don't even know what to say.
So, the other thing I wanted to bring up about the dunk contest, really quick. Stephen A. Smith pointed out and called out LeBron for ruining the dunk contest.
He said this for a while now.
Agree or disagree?
I'm 50-50 on it, and it's like 50 serious, 50 half. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It makes sense, but it's probably a little too far. Again, as much as we like to hate on LeBron.
If LeBron did it, people would have followed.
Yeah.
That is a fact.
Right.
He would have set a trend of, like, if he came in and said, I'm bringing back superstars in the dunk contest, it would have done something. He's LeBron James.
Yeah.
But not only did he decide not to do it, he teased the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe 2009, when he said, I am putting my name in next year's dunk contest, and the judges went crazy, and us kids were like, oh my God, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And he was in street clothes the next year, just like everybody else was on the sideline.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, everybody points out, the dunk contest used to be the thing. That's why it's the last contest of the night. You had guys like Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant, Tracy McGrady, all these stars. And then you go back to the 80s, Jordan, Wilkins, like big name guys. And now we got a G Leaguer winning it.
Listen,
now, Mac McClung is a great dunker.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, nobody really sees him.
To me, the biggest prop, did you see the quote Anthony Edwards had when they asked him about a competitive all-star game?
Oh, yeah, that he basically just said it's like vacation. And
he said, it's a break for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. It's not something I take seriously.
Right.
We're just out there to dunk a few times and shoot some jumpers.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said. I'm misquoting him overall.
Right.
But he basically said it's just fun.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be competitive.
Which to a degree is
I think that has spilled over to the events as well.
Yeah.
I think the entire thought process of the entire weekend has just become, eh.
Yeah.
Who cares?
And it's like,
let's just lay back.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, people are pointing out, like, there's a lot more money in the league nowadays. There's not as much competitive fire because at the end of the day, they're still getting a paycheck. I can't entirely blame them for that, but it just stinks for the fans at times. Because you'd think right now, man, if you got Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, Ja Morant, and Anthony Edwards to do a dunk contest,
the ratings would be out of this world.
It would be insane. It would be
like LaVine and Gordon's last ride,
mm-hmm.
and Ja Morant and Anthony Edwards taking up. It would be insane.
Right.
I'd be like nose to the TV watching every single dunk.
Yeah. The other thing that stinks about the All-Star weekend, and I don't know if you remember this, like All-Star weekend is just slowed down tremendously as far as pacing throughout the night. Because back when I was growing up, there used to be like, I don't know if this is fully true. I don't know the exact number, but there was like 12 to 16 3-point players that were in the 3-point contest. And then the dunk contest used to have like, I want to say like 8 guys at some point.
I think that was like back when we were younger.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
It was a lot deeper when we were younger.
Right. But now you have, I mean, you still have a good amount of 3-point guys at this point. And then you only have 4 dunkers, and it goes pretty quick. It's just interesting to me. And I know, like, if you can't even do the dunk contest with more than 4 guys now because nobody wants to do it. But it just takes away from adding more people into it. I don't know. The skills contest, we talked about it before in the preview. It was just like
was a joke.
We thought. Turned out terrible. Nobody tries.
Listen, Scotty Barnes, I think that's all you have to say about the skills competition.
I was excited for the skills competition in the very first team. They went the wrong way dribbling twice. Scotty Barnes loses the ball.
Listen, bro. Him falling over and laughing and like just tossing.
Anthony Edwards only shooting with his left hand.
Listen, man.
It's tough.
I sent you that clip of Darren Williams in the skills competition.
And that's the stuff I remember.
And the level of effort and how like cleanly they wanted to make everything.
And that was like when they first went to that. When they first went to the skills competition. Darren Williams got in it. Tony Parker got in it. Chris Paul.
Still prime Steve Nash.
Steve Nash.
Jason Kidd.
Yep.
All the best point guards in the game did it. And they wanted to prove something.
Yeah.
That is the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
All of that competitive, it's gone.
Yeah.
It was in like every part of the league when we were younger.
Yeah.
Everything meant something. Everything, the players were all in.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we were younger, the dunk contest was kind of coming back because in the finals, in the 90s, it had a bit of a fall off.
Right.
But when Jason Richardson came back up, people started taking it seriously again.
I was going to say, I'm spoiled, and I'll be honest, because when I started watching All-Star Weekend, what I can remember is Vince Carter in 2000.
See,
I was 8 years old.
The first one I remember is Jason Richardson in like 02.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one I remember.
And that's where I was going. Like, I got Vince Carter when I was 8 years old. He's my favorite player of all time for a reason. Then we got into the Jason Richardson years where he won back-to-back years.
The first full contest I remember is Fred Jones, Jason Richardson, 03.
Yeah.
In L.A. That's the first full one I remember.
And I remember, like, Jason Richardson.
It was 04 L.A.
They had, like.
I can't remember which one, yeah.
During the Jason Richardson contest, they had, like, lights off. That's when you had all the flashing cameras.
The atmosphere was real.
Right.
Like, I didn't know who Fred Jones was.
Yeah.
And when he did that lean and dunk, like, I knew who Fred Jones was for the rest of my life.
Yep.
I used to look him up on 2K rosters, like, that's that guy that almost beat Jason, like, it meant something.
Right. And I know, like, the dunks that they did back then don't really hold up to what they did today, like, nowadays.
Jason Richardson would destroy people today. But other people, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just crazy. And I always say, I think Josh Smith had some.
I love that Denver dunk contest. Man, you're making me emotional now. Because these are the ones I really remember.
Right.
The 05 contest in Denver. 06 was when Nate Robinson won his first contest.
Yep. And then they had the
Rattle them off after that.
They had the Nate Robinson-Dwight Howard rivalry for a little while.
Yeah.
Then we got into Blake Griffin. We had the prop dunk era.
Shouts out to Gerald Green that actually did an interesting prop dunk. Probably the most underrated one in contest history.
Before
blowing out the candle.
Before they really looked at the replay before. That was unfortunate. And then we had a lull for a little while. We had
Evans.
The team dunk contest.
The team contest when All-Stars agreed to do it.
Yeah.
And then they made it a team contest.
Yeah.
And it lasted like 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we finally got Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon, and people thought, holy crap, the dunk contest is back. And then Aaron Gordon got jobbed.
Yeah.
And then he said, he's done. And Zach LaVine won two titles. He's done. Which you can't fault either of them for, because they did it. But, man, it just leaves you. It leaves you hanging. Makes you want more. And I don't know how they're going to do it going forward. The three-point contest is still good. Maybe they put the three-point contest last.
I wish I was awake for that. I woke up when Dame was winning, and then I fell asleep again and missed the dunk contest.
Four guys tied at 26, which was great.
That's cool.
Made it exciting. And then Steph versus Sabrina was good.
I missed that one, too. Yeah, it looked really exciting.
That's something they can definitely lean on. A lot of people are like, if Caitlin Clark goes to the WNBA, they can do Steph and Dame versus Caitlin and Sabrina. Like, that'd be pretty cool. Even though Dame and Steph are going to win. But Sabrina showed.
Sabrina scored 26.
She's right there.
Yeah.
Steph had 29. Steph would have won the three-point contest. No surprise. But, like, maybe they put that to the primetime slot. Just move the dunk contest out. Start showing people it's not as important.
At least for a few years, they need to make a change.
Yeah.
Listen, I've heard players, this suggestion would make things more competitive again. Either a one-on-one or a two-on-two contest. Like a tournament.
Yeah.
Where guys just, you got to show off your skill. There's nobody hiding in this.
But that's the problem.
You got to play to win.
But that's the problem, though. Then it becomes a dunk contest where it's like guys don't want to be embarrassed.
I think all stars, these level of young dudes, they want to show off their bags.
Maybe.
I think that's one thing they want to show off, like how much skill they actually have. Hmm. I think Maybe. They'd be in for it, especially with a cash prize.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee Kyrie would be in. Yeah. Just to show everybody he's the greatest, like, he has the greatest handles in league history. Kyrie would be in.
Put Pat Bev in there. Because he'll start talking
to him. He's going to try to just stop everybody.
Just let him get destroyed. But, like, he'd be the reason because he could call people out and then they'll be like, no, I'm going to get in this then.
I want him announcing on the side. I don't want him playing. I want Pat Bev as a commentator.
There you go.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody knows. We didn't talk about the All-Star game because we're not going to. They scored almost 400 points. I think it was 397.
Cat scored 50.
And he didn't win the
Congratulations.
MVP. But I looked at his box score. He had like 27 attempts or something.
Didn't Dame win MVP?
Yeah, he did. Because he hit some deep threes. Tyrese Halliburton almost did it. But it's just boring. There's nothing. Like, it was a blowout, too. The East won by like 20 or 30. They got to figure something out for that, too. And I don't know what it is. But right now, the All-Star game and all that, just not what
I think the target score a few years ago worked.
Yeah.
And it just, for some reason, they didn't stick with exactly how they did it.
Yeah.
Because guys got really competitive once, like, the win was in.
Somebody brought that up. Wasn't it that year that team got home court advantage from it?
I don't remember them actually putting playoff stuff on it.
I don't either, but somebody mentioned it, and I couldn't remember if that was true or not. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But All-Star Weekend has passed us, and I guess we're getting ready for NBA playoffs, getting closer.
March Madness is around the corner.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about NBA right now. The other one little tidbit about the NBA that I wanted to bring up, Beef Stew getting arrested.
That guy.
He should have been traded. He should have been traded.
He has some issues that he needs to work out. Mm-hmm. He really does.
And I brought this up with my brother. It's like, Beef Stew, we would have loved that energy if it was used correctly. We learned it with Rashid, and we learned the opposite side with CJ GJ for the Lions. Like, you like that energy, but when you don't show up with that energy and use it to your advantage, oh, we don't want it. And that's what Beef Stew's kind of showing.
Listen, Kevin Garnett was the most intense player probably in basketball history.
Mm-hmm.
He said all types of wild stuff. A lot of dudes wanted to fight him on a nightly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Garnett wasn't fighting anybody.
Right.
He was playing mind games and motivating himself with all that craziness.
Right.
Beef Stew's just out here being wild.
Yeah. But even guys like back in the, like Ron Artest, who was a knucklehead, straight knucklehead.
He also, after years, we've learned he had some actual issues going on.
But
he was a knucklehead, but he had things going on.
But at the same time, he was able to back it up.
He was locked in. He was an all-star level player.
Right. He was one of the best players at that time.
Yeah.
So, like, Indiana fans, I don't know how they feel, I guess, but they probably embraced him to a certain degree until he hurt his team. But, like, you like that intensity. If Beef Stew would have been that guy, I might not have had a big of a problem with it. When you punch somebody before the game with nothing on the line, no game even being played, I don't want that. I don't want that on my team. And it's just unfortunate. So I don't know what they're going to do with him at this point, because what do you do? Now he basically lost all his trade value, I think. And we gave him an extension. So I don't know. It's unfortunate. But yeah, just wanted to bring that up. All right. College basketball heating up more and more and more. We've already seen Purdue get knocked off again. Ohio State.
UConn just lost last night.
UConn losing.
Popped by Creighton.
I thought that was crazy because when I heard that game was going on, I said, oh, Creighton, they're the team that usually kind of falls apart at some point. And I was like, UConn's going to blow them out. I'm not going to watch that game. And then I checked the scores before I went to bed.
A crazy stat I didn't know until after that game. UConn is 0-21 against top 10 teams on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many years, but
0-21. Yeah, it's crazy. So take that for what you will. But college basketball has gotten pretty intense lately. And MSU, once again, they beat Michigan. They've been rolling a little bit the last couple weeks. They've been playing pretty solid. Malik Hall's been going good. And then they lose to Iowa last night.
At home. There are so many layers to that loss.
And I have no...
There's so many layers.
No thoughts about it. And it's just, again, every time we talk about this team,
it's the same issue.
It's a sinking roller coaster.
It's the definition of insanity.
It is.
Doing the same thing.
Right.
And it's over and over again.
Like, I feel like I'm, every time I'm like, oh, I'm at a loss for words. I don't understand. Oh, they had a good week. Oh, but then they lost. It's frustrating.
Do you know who Iowa's starting center is, Joey?
No, I don't.
It's a kid named Owen Freeman. Hmm. He's from Moline, Illinois. He's averaging 11-6 on 65% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good college big numbers, right?
Yeah.
6'10", 230. He was not even a four-star recruit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a true freshman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last night in that win... let me pull it up. Well, he only had 8, 2, and 2,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't miss a shot. And the bigs for Michigan State, should we look at their stats?
Maybe.
Matty Sissoko, 0 points, 1 rebound, 5 minutes. Carson Cooper, 12 minutes,
mm-hmm.
0 for 2, 3.7 rebounds.
Yeah. Well, just look at, I don't know how to pronounce it, Ben Crickey.
Yeah. Really fun name, Ben Crickey. Came from Belmont, I'm pretty sure.
But he's a senior, 6'9". He had 18.
He puts up numbers.
And 14 rebounds. And he's only 6'9". That tells you the state of the big men for Michigan State.
Not only is Tom Izzo missing on guys like Owen Freeman, a true freshman at Iowa, who's averaging 10-6. Ben Crickey was a transfer
mm-hmm.
from Belmont. That many schools were looking at,
mm-hmm.
including a Big Ten school
mm-hmm.
in Iowa. Ben Crickey was there.
Yeah.
Averaging 14-5, 54% shooting.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck with his guys.
Mm-hmm.
How long does this, how long? Like, I think that right there is the prime example. And when you look at Michigan State's box score, mm-hmm. but the fact that you are missing out on guys that can come in and play for you, you won't embrace the transfers, a transfer comes in and gets 14 rebounds on you, and you're sticking with the guys that can't play.
Mm-hmm. Which, at the end of the day, though, the wild part about all the transfer stuff, Michigan State's best player is a transfer portal player. Make it make sense.
Is amen.
And then, again, we keep talking about it, but the development for this team has not been there in over a decade, probably. There's guys,
a few in there.
There's maybe guys here and there, but like, Matty Sissoko started this game. Thank goodness he only played 5 minutes. But you have a starter that played only 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. That you're starting a guy and he only plays 5 minutes. Maybe he shouldn't be a starter. Just my thought.
I tend to agree with your logic there, Joey.
just my thought.
You're making a point. You're making some points.
And the other thing is, when Michigan State was winning their games the last couple weeks, or playing better in general, they had played small ball. Cone Carr was getting more time. Granted, this was against Penn State and your lowly Michigan Wolverines. But they played small ball. They played a little better. And then all of a sudden, they try to go back to playing bigs. And again, we talked about it a lot. This team doesn't have any bigs that are worth anything for the most part. We said, let's just try Xavier Booker. No. We're not going to. Okay, fine, whatever. And then, like, you got guys like Jackson Kohler and stuff. Like, he's trying to work his way back, but It's not working. I don't know.
He needs more time to come back from his injury.
So just continue with what's going well right now. The only thing that makes me feel okay for them going into the tournament right now is Malik Hall has actually been pretty consistent the last few, like, last month.
Last few weeks, yeah.
That's, like, the only thing. And everybody's always like, oh, yeah, but it's Izzo in March and Izzo in April. He's going to turn it around. Okay, but you can't rely on that every time.
Outside of 2019, when was the last time Izzo made an Izzo run?
Yeah, I don't know. Last year, they made a run. They didn't.
They got to the Sweet 16, didn't they?
Yeah.
When Kansas State beat them?
Yeah. Can't,
I believe.
Sweet 16 or Elite 8 even?
I think it was the Sweet 16. Because Kansas State lost to Florida Atlantic in the Elite 8.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Florida Atlantic made it to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Good call. Yes. So it's like, okay, that was their decent run. And I hate to say it, my family hated me for saying it, that I felt like Kansas State was going to win that game from the get-go. And they did because they just had that extra thing that it didn't seem like Michigan State had. And that's the problem. And I don't know how to fix it. I know basketball, and I say all these things about like ripping up on Tom Izzo and all that. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know any better than Tom Izzo realistically. But I just realize that there's certain things that this team is missing.
It's obvious to see when you don't have the guys.
Right.
It's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You have 3 to 4 players that you can count on sometimes to get you points.
Yeah.
Tyson Walker is the guarantee. Hoggard some nights.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Aiken some nights. Malik Hall, really good last month.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, what are you believing in?
Yeah.
But I won't disrespect Trey Holloman because he did something.
Yeah.
He's shooting 41% from 3 for the season. Mm-hmm. The volume isn't high,
yeah,
but he's hitting them.
Right.
So I'll respect Trey Holloman for that.
Mm-hmm. The hard thing is, like, Malik Hall has been playing good, but, like, in the back of your mind, you're like, when he's going to go back to that 5 points and, like, 2 rebounds kind of night? Like, you hope it doesn't happen, but I've seen it happen so many times now. He's always the guy that it's like, if Malik Hall can stay consistent, he's the one that I think that could push this team over the top and make a run. But he just hasn't shown the consistency enough to where I can even believe it, even though he's been doing it for the last month. I just, at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, well, eventually he's probably going to have an off night, which, I mean, it happens. That's how basketball goes. But when you get into this time of the year, you need to be at your A game.
This is when it's those seniors.
Yeah.
Are supposed to be at the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, Malik Hall, he's playing well.
Yeah.
But don't know what you're going to get from game to game.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Hoggard, don't know what you're going to get from game to game.
Yeah.
I personally think they're a 50-50 shot of losing their first game in the Big Ten tournament or winning like 2 or 3 games.
Yeah.
It's 50-50 to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Tyson Walker heats up and just goes like Kemba Walker mode.
Mm-hmm.
They could do something weirdly special just out of nowhere.
Right.
But this team just doesn't have that extra, that thing, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that thing where most teams, they can see it during the regular season. Kansas State fans saw that there was something happening with Kansas State last year.
Mm-hmm.
With Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson, going into the tournament, they were in a groove that most teams just weren't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Michigan State fan could tell me that they see that in this team.
Yeah.
Most teams, I always check on like fans' comments on Twitter after wins and losses. Fans are just searching for answers right now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where it's going to come from.
Yeah. And if it tells you anything about like how I feel about this Michigan State team, like, I would say my all-time favorite Michigan State basketball players that I can think of off the top of my head are Brandon Dawson and Aaron Henry. And those guys were just...
I did not realize Aaron Henry was meant that much to you.
Well, not like... Like, he had that time in was it the 2019 run where he just seemed like he was the guy?
And it was 2021.
Was it?
When they were like on the verge of not making the tournament.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was single-handedly pulling out games.
Yeah.
And like every
year. And in that moment I was like, man, this guy's a dog and I like that. And so I like him for that reason. So in recent memory, he's one that I liked a lot. But I like those guys that just put their head down and just go play. And I mean, there's been other guys that do that for this team, but those are just standouts to me personally. But I don't see anybody like that right now on this team. And that's always been the thing about Michigan State, is like you have like Tyson Walker, Cassius Winston, even Denzel Valentine or something. Like you have that kind of key guy that plays really well, but then you're going to have that secondary player like Brandon Dawson, Xavier Tillman.
A glue guy.
Yeah. That just, he's like,
whenever it's time to make a play, they make a play.
I'm going to do the dirty work. I'm going to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And as much as I hate it, Matt McQuaid also was kind of that guy.
On that tournament run, he was nails.
Yeah.
During that tournament run.
And again, I don't see that kind of guy for this team. And I don't know where it would come from either. Like last year, it was Jaden Akins in the tournament. Is he going to be able to flip the switch again? I don't know. You would have hoped that he would have. We've said it a couple times. I would have hoped that he would have just had a breakout season this year.
Yeah.
And he hasn't. So for him to have to turn that on in the tournament again, I don't know if I can trust it. So I'm in a weird spot once again. And again, I'm probably sounding like a hater for a lot of people, but at the end of the day, I want this team to be successful. That's the problem. I want to see them do well, but it's like the Pistons. Chris always called me a hater because I didn't like Andre Drummond being the number one option. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. But it's because I want the best for these teams. So I'm going to be hypercritical, probably to the point of being too critical and not just enjoying it. But that's how my fandom works. Luckily for Michigan, I don't even have to care about them.
Preach, sir.
Like, I mean, again, we talked about that before, but like, even with Juwan coming in, I haven't really liked the regime that they've had, the Hunter Dickinson era and all that. There wasn't too many guys that I enjoyed watching, but
his first few teams were Beeline guys, mm-hmm. His best teams.
Right. But you go back to Beeline era and you had certain like glue pieces, like Abdul Rahman. People forget about that guy.
Listen, one of my favorite players in Michigan, he hit a shot every time they needed one.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, the other fan favorite, Spike Albrecht, like people loved him. But like those teams, they just had something, and we don't get that right now. And so again, it's nice that I don't have to worry about Michigan because they're trash. They're going to be bottom of the barrel Big Ten. They play Nebraska this week, right?
They play at Northwestern.
Oh, Northwestern.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
They'll probably get destroyed. They play against Purdue at home. They'll probably get destroyed. They play at Rutgers.
Okay.
They'll probably lose.
Yeah, probably.
But I think Michigan State is in a really – I've said this before, so it's nothing new. They're in a strange spot in their program,
mm-hmm.
Not just as like this year's team. If you look at the Big Ten standings, they're in between two teams.
Yeah.
Two programs that have no real history of success. Two programs that are on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern is ahead of them at 4.
Yep.
Chris Collins has built something that is close to impossible to build at Northwestern. A consistently good, like, tough, smart basketball program,
mm-hmm.
with Northwestern. They're better than Michigan State right now.
Mm-hmm.
They just beat Indiana on the road.
Yeah.
And right behind them is Nebraska, who outside of, like, the year in the 90s with Ty Lue at point guard.
Right.
And those, like, short few years where Tim Miles was their coach, where they had good teams for like 2 years in the 2010s. Nebraska's done nothing. And I think if you look at Nebraska, they're right behind Michigan State in the standings. They have a few guys where you look like if they get into the tournament, that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Keisei Tominaga can drop 30 on you and hit like 8 threes.
Yeah.
Rink Mast is like a beast in the post, and he can hit threes on the outside. They have some guys that are dangerous.
Yeah.
C.J. Wilcher can come off the bench and hit you with 5 or 6 threes.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild that you can't – you look at Michigan State and you just can't think about that.
Yeah.
Outside of Tyson Walker, there's no guarantee of anybody doing anything.
Right.
And, yeah, Nebraska and Northwestern are on the rise, and they're kind of – they're on the same level as Michigan State right now, mm-hmm. and better in some aspects.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that's, like, kind of saving Michigan State right now, Michigan's down, Ohio State's down.
Yeah.
Maryland's down.
Speaking of Ohio State, they beat Purdue with their interim coach, which is hilarious. Right. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But like all these Big Ten teams that we've seen towards the top have fallen down a little bit. And now that's partially because of Northwestern and Nebraska being better nowadays. But there's a little bit of a shift in the Big Ten. And I think that's kind of saving Michigan State. But the problem is, I think a lot of your average Michigan State fans are okay with being middle of the pack.
If the team makes the tournament, we're good.
Which doesn't make sense to me because Michigan State fans always talk about all the Final Fours they made, all the tournament appearances they make. But yet, there's like this disconnect. Like you said, it's like they make the tournament and they're okay. Okay, but we don't look good going into the tournament. We had a special run last year and we made it to the Sweet 16. Like that's... realistically, that's not that special. And we lost.
For what your program is.
Right.
Are they a new blue blood or not? Are they one of those programs that people look at as top tier? Because they still get these preseason hype.
Mm-hmm.
As we see, they were ranked top 5 in the preseason.
Right.
Everybody expected them to be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah.
Bar none.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely.
And this is what they're giving them right now.
And they're for sure a blue blood, but. Like you're saying, like a spin on it, like are they a new blue blood?
But even what I'm saying, if you're a new blue blood, like Villanova under Jay Wright,
mm-hmm.
they became, we expect championships.
Yeah.
Jay Wright won 2 of them in a 6-year span.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody had knew what was going to happen and knew what to expect under Jay Wright.
Yeah.
What are the expectations under Tom Izzo right now?
Right. Make the tournament. I don't know. It's a good question. It really is. All right, with our last couple minutes, we just want to go over some more college basketball, look at the top 25 again. And unfortunately, it's going to change again because UConn, like we said, they just lost this week.
Yeah, they'll still be top 3, but yeah, but great win for Creighton.
Houston's going to go back above them. Houston's going to go back to number 1. They've rattled off a bunch of wins. They just beat Iowa State, who's moved up to number 6.
And they absolutely popped Texas.
Yes. Purdue going to fall again a little bit, and then Arizona should bounce back up slightly. So we're going to have a bunch of bouncing around a little bit. Tennessee had a good win over Missouri, kind of a comeback win, but they got it done. Marquette got blown out by UConn. So
yeah, they don't have much of that spark that they had last year.
Right. Duke should go back up a little bit. Kansas, they might just stay right where they're at because they've been back and forth lately.
Yeah.
Same with North Carolina. We get to the point where now these teams are kind of bouncing around. Creighton's going to definitely go up. I don't know how high they're going to go, but they'll probably crack top 10, I would think. And then we got those SEC teams, Alabama and Auburn, having a good season at 13 and 14. Didn't Dayton just lose? Yeah,
Dayton lost to VCU 49-47 a few games ago.
Yeah, that was.
But that was more of a, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They won their games outside of that.
Yeah.
They popped Duquesne, beat Fordham by 8.
Right.
Yeah. Dayton is kind of rolling.
Yeah, one team that snuck into it since we last talked to was St. Mary's. They knocked off Gonzaga.
Listen, I brought up Aiden Mahaney.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was either 3 weeks ago or a month ago. But they're undefeated in the West Coast Conference right now.
Yeah.
And that win over San Francisco, I watched the second half last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really big win. And they have some pieces that could do something in the tournament.
Yeah. And people probably laugh at San Francisco, but I don't know if people realize San Francisco's been a pretty good program the last few years. Yeah. So.
The top of the West Coast Conference is legit really good.
Mm-hmm. And then we got San Diego State, South Carolina, unfortunately, your darling team.
They got beat by 40 at Auburn.
They got smacked. Listen,
They had a few of those losses in them. They're still not the most talented team in the country.
Right.
It's going to happen.
And then they lost to LSU right after that.
They needed to be humbled.
But I mean, they're still having a great tough, season. Yeah. The fun new entry, Washington State.
I haven't watched a single game of theirs.
I haven't either, but I noticed
they are 20-6.
Yeah.
That is surprising.
But they're going to play Arizona tomorrow night. So we'll find out where they're really at. And then we got Colorado State jumping back in. Texas Tech. I think this is another one of those Texas Tech years that they might be able to make some sneaky run.
They got a few guys.
Just because of the way they play.
Yeah.
They blew out Kansas a couple weeks ago, played somewhat close with Iowa State, and then they just beat TCU. So watch out for them a little bit. Florida in the top 25. Haven't seen Florida in a minute. And then BYU. And then there's a bunch of teams right behind them that are looking to crack the top 25. Michigan State was one of those teams until they lost to Iowa.
Yeah.
Any other teams that you want to bring up that you've watched recently? We only got like 2 minutes, but if there's a team or two that you wanted to bring up that could make some noise or do something.
I was going to bring up St. Mary's because, like I said, they're 13-1 conference, and they're kind of on a heater. I don't know if they're going to like waste their heater during the regular season.
Yeah,
it'll be tough to waste it and then lose in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on a really nice roll right now, and I think people should pay more attention to them. South Florida.
Okay.
Listen, man. It is incredible what Abdur, what's his last name? It's Abdur Rahim. He has one other name, but
Sharif?
No, not Sharif, not the NBA player. Amir Abdur Rahim, I think that's his name.
Okay.
He was the coach at Kennesaw State, the team that won, that made the tournament last year.
Mm-hmm.
He took that team for being winless in 2019 or 2020. Within 3 years, he got Kennesaw State to the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Never been done. Takes this job at South Florida, a school with no basketball history, really. I don't know if they've ever made any type of tournament run.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the last time they made the tournament. Right now, South Florida is 19-5, 12-1 in conference, 13-2 at home, and they've won 11 straight.
Okay.
And this is his first year as coach at South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he brought a few guys from Kennesaw State with him. Chris Youngblood is a really good player. He's one of them.
Yeah.
But it is unbelievable to me that he hasn't been a head coach for very long, and he's doing the impossible at multiple programs.
Yeah.
He deserves so much credit. He deserves more eyes because it's awesome what he's doing.
Yeah.
He could possibly get in as, if he doesn't win the conference tournament, as one of the, what's the term? When you're like in a lower conference and you could still get in, like without winning the conference tournament. I'm forgetting the term. But even if they don't win their conference tourney, I still think they could get in, even though they're in the American.
Okay.
Because FAU, Florida Atlantic, who was preseason ranked, they're third in the conference right now.
Yeah.
Charlotte is also having a surprise season with the first year head coach. They're 11-2 in conference. FAU was 20-6 and 10-3 in conference.
Mm-hmm.
And USF and FAU just played last Sunday. South Florida won.
Yeah.
So
knocked them out of the top 25.
Yeah. Crazy impressive season by South Florida right now.
Yeah.
They deserve all the credit in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Syracuse, two teams out of the ACC, actually. Syracuse, who I think is really sneaky. I think they could possibly make a little run in the ACC tournament because they have guys that can go off and just go on heaters.
Yeah.
Their best player is Judah Mintz, who's averaging 18. But Chris Bell, he hit 8 threes in the first half against NC State last night.
Yeah, you sent me that picture.
When you have a guy that can do stuff like that, you're in almost every game.
Right.
But also, I'm a huge fan of Wake Forest and what they've done this season, honestly. I enjoyed like their nickname as a kid, the Demon Deacons.
Yeah.
The type of players they used to have, the Chris Pauls, the Jeff Teagues.
Tim Duncan.
I didn't see Tim Duncan, but yeah.
No, I know.
Al-Farouq Aminu was there.
No.
There's a name.
Okay.
Al-Farouq. But they got a guy named Hunter Salas, who was a 5-star coming out of high school, went to Gonzaga, never lived up to his billing, honestly, at Gonzaga.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging 18 for Wake Forest, shooting 41% from three, 50% from the field. He's a guy that's going up NBA draft boards because he's 6'6". He's athletic. He's got game. He can shoot. He's one of the big reasons why Wake Forest is on their way to potentially making the tournament because they're up to fourth in the ACC now.
Yeah.
And now that Virginia is kind of dropping off, they could potentially get up to third.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have Hunter Salas is a two guard, but their other two guard, Cam Hildreth, is from England.
Okay.
A kid a few years ago that they just took a flyer on overseas. He's averaging 13, 5, and 3. 44% from the field, 35 from 3. He's a kid that's got some game, too. They're a really interesting team if you watch them.
Yeah.
They even have a kid that I think is Joey Tysik-ish.
Okay.
Parker Fredrickson.
Okay.
Freshman out of Oklahoma. He's just a three-point shooter.
Okay. Wow.
They put him out there, and he just puts him up. He hits him, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's 6'3 kid, 195. Really good shooter they bring off the bench.
Okay.
So I like Wake Forest a lot. I like their roster. I like what they're building. Yeah, right. They're 17-9, 9-6 in conference right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give you one to watch tonight. Colorado State, New Mexico, Isaiah Stevens.
That's exciting.
Jalen House. Should be a good matchup, actually. Gives you something to watch for teams that you don't usually see too often. Next week, we'll do more college basketball talk. We'll get into some more nitty-gritty. We'll start talking tournament previews a little bit. And trying to figure out guests for March Madness show, because that's coming up crazy enough. And it's our favorite time of the year. But this has been Views from the Sidelines, and we'll see you guys next time.
Oakland is first in the horizon. Greg Campy, if you mess this up, I'm not even going to go there. Just don't mess it up. I was going to say.